Welcome to Team White. I'm Alex Linder here in the Nemo, Northeast Missouri, and with me today, as always, is Jan in South Africa.
Hi there, Alex.
Hello, Jan. Today we're going to talk a little about COVID-19, coronavirus, the Chinese flu, the Wu flu, whatever you want to call it, and just what we've seen in our very, very different geographical areas. We'll start with Jan in South Africa telling us about what sort of effect has there been down in your area? It's pretty hot compared to where we are. And we know that viruses, these cold flu viruses, do better in the winter. What's been going on in South Africa with regard to coronavirus?
Well, Alex, you'd think it was World War IV or World War III, the way that they're carrying on with this coronavirus. They put us into total and utter lockdown for... Initially, it was 3 weeks. Then they extended it for 2 weeks. So it was 5 weeks. Everybody was quite happy to do 3 weeks. They thought, well, you know, everyone, all the whites, even the white liberals in my suburb and so forth, they thought, 3 weeks, you know, we'll do our thing, you know, we'll stop everybody dying and so forth. But I must tell you, by the time we got to the end of the 3 weeks, you could see people starting to get fidgety, everyone being stuck in their houses. And I live in the suburbs. So the place where I live, my suburb, also the particular road ends down by a river. So we've actually got a piece of open territory right next to us where criminals sometimes come from. So people here, the whites here, like to walk their dogs and things. And the government outlawed any form of exercise and dogs and stuff. In the mornings, the whites are up, even old white people are even up on bicycles, and everyone's dashing around doing exercise first thing in the morning. There's a lot of, you know, the whites have got some healthy practices here, Alex. And others are walking their dogs and so forth. And all of that was stopped. They made a law against that. And it was even said that dog walking... It was even said that it had been noted that walking your dog is basically a whites-only kind of a thing, because even when the non-whites, the few non-whites who have dogs, they don't care for their animals. So they made walking your dog and all that, running, walking, all that is illegal, so nobody went out. But I could see at the end of the 3 weeks, you could see people getting fidgety that stayed in their houses. And Alex, in my suburb, I don't have a double story, but I climb on my garage roof every now and then. I've got a permanent ladder onto the top of my garage. And it allows me, because there are quite a lot of trees here, and it allows me to look a little bit into my neighbor's yards and things. Because we've all got big fences, you know. You know, mm-hmm. Alex, we've all got 6, 8, 10-foot walls and fences. So you can't just walk out your house and see what's going on two doors away, because there are walls and things in the way.
And this is purely due to black crime.
Absolutely, Alex. Absolutely. And let me tell you, every single thing that we have here is not because we want it. It's because we have to have it. If you don't have it, the blacks will be in your yard in 2 seconds, Alex. And I've got a neighbor of mine is a German. I'm going to sidetrack a little bit, but on this black thing for you. I've got a German neighbor who's about two doors away from me. And unfortunately, this German is a total believer in Jesus and the Bible. And he believes that Germans are bad. He's got a lovely wife and two beautiful daughters. Lovely German, they're healthy people, clever people. But he's got this infatuation with Jesus and with living the good life. And I've tried to speak to him in the past. I've tried to speak to him about Germans. I've tried to speak to him about Jews. And he says to me, no, you know, the Germans were not good people. And so he makes a whole business. He's totally infatuated with the guilt trip. He himself is living a life of guilt as a result of trying to prove that he's not a bad German, a German villain. So what my German neighbor does is he's the only person in our neighborhood who doesn't have a 6-foot fence, etc. And he also donates to blacks. And blacks come and they beg for food and they beg for clothing, and the German and his wife give them food and clothes. And before this lockdown, Alex, there was a time where, because I'm at home now all the time, I heard the one day somebody banging on a metal gate. And I went outside, and I was driving out, and I saw here's a black banging on this German's gate. And the German and his wife and children are not at home. And I said to the black, you know, what are you doing here? He says, I want clothes. These people give me clothes. So I said to him, they're not here, and bugger off, you know, go away. And another time I also chased blacks away from the German. The German is so kind to these fucking blacks. But anyway, and he's a Bible believer, so he believes, you know, God provides and God will protect you, etc. So he's the only person in our road who doesn't have security. He's got a tiny little fence that's maybe 3 feet high, and that's a big no-no. But because I don't really talk to him because we clash on these things, I discovered a couple of weeks ago, I discovered...
Well, Jan, hold on. If God provides, what, is he just helping God out or what?
I think he lives on a guilt trip. He's trying to be a good German because he believes that you know, Germans are bad, and they are Germans. They are 100% Germans, these people, and they're living like they're constantly trying to prove to everybody. They're trying to prove to everybody how good they are. You know, and
we get that, but how did he end up in South Africa? And isn't he a little worried that he's going to end up like the attacker, at best having his stuff stolen?
Alex, well, that's what I was going to tell you. I don't know his full history of his life. He's a little bit younger than me. But what I will tell you is that several weeks ago, before the lockdown, I noticed that he put out a message on our community group on our phones, where everybody interacts, including the non-whites who are in the neighborhood. And it turned out that he'd been robbed twice in the last couple of months, twice. Blacks had broken into his house. They'd even like broken in through his door, and they'd robbed him of a whole bunch of stuff. And he just doesn't seem to learn. But you know what? I've got a family member. I've got a family member who married a woman, an English-speaking woman, and she's also on the Jesus trip. And, you know, my family member was complaining to me that he's struggling. He's in debt. He's got real debt because of his children and education and everything. And he says if he hands over the money affairs to his wife just goes crazy. So eventually I said to him, well, why does she go crazy? Does she believe that Jesus is going to provide? And he says to me, yes. So you get these Christian types who actually will do crazy things because they believe that God's going to provide. You know, it's like proof of their belief. So it's nuts. It's nuts. They can get killed like that, you know. That's what.
Well, you let the blacks into your house and they see what you've got. And then they're going to tell other people about it. And if you have anything expensive or you have nice blonde daughters, I mean, it's pretty obvious what might happen.
Alex, you're dead on the money. Dead on the money, my friend. That's exactly how it works. Totally. But luckily, most of us, the usage of blacks in my neighborhood has dropped massively. If I compare, I moved into this house 25 years ago. And Alex, the number of blacks that are employed in this neighborhood 25 years ago compared to now, it has dropped by 95%. There's hardly any blacks around. Very, very few.
Why is that?
Mostly, I think, because of economic circumstances. I think there are two things. There are two reasons. The one is whites, firstly, are struggling more financially than they used to. And secondly, because the government pushes up the salaries of the blacks, they actually make it impossible for you to hire blacks at the cheaper rates that you used to get. So then what happened is, believe it or not, the black government pushing up the salaries of the blacks results in large numbers of blacks losing their jobs. So the way that they get around that is then you had a situation where whites could not employ blacks full time like they used to, because whites used to have blacks 7 days a week, you know. They could afford them for a whole week at a time. Then what happened, because of the cost, they then started hiring blacks for a day or half a day. And so those two things then resulted in like 95% of the blacks losing their jobs. Most blacks, vast, vast numbers of blacks in South Africa, you're talking in the millions, have lost their jobs from whites because the black government pushed up the salaries. And of course, the hardships. So it's a good trend. So the irony of it is that under black rule, the races are actually splitting apart more and more. That's the good news. Everybody in South Africa will say, no, we're working together. The blacks will say it, the whites will say it. But the reality of South Africa is that we're actually splitting apart more and more all the time. And COVID has just added to it. And it's good. It's a good trend.
Yeah, that's a lot of this is even not even race related in that, you know, they would talk about when you promote people over their actual ability, that's what happened. They can't handle the work and they fail. So if you try to say, oh, they're equal to whites and they should have all the jobs the same as whites, you can do a little of that politically, but the stuff they actually can do, which is, you know, be butlers and maids and stuff, well, they lose that. Thomas Sowell talking about blacks being admitted to colleges like a level or two higher than they should be. And that's sort of similar what they're doing there, but it's no good for anybody.
Absolutely. The world functions on reality at the end of the day. Reality is there.
But we want Americans, we're talking about Team White, just to imagine what it's like to have eight, he's saying 8 to 10 foot, not little three, in America you have 3 foot chain link fences, but he's saying like 8 to 10 foot high barriers. You're basically living in an open air prison in a lot of ways in this land with a nice sunny climate, all because blacks are not on the same level of whites.
Absolutely. I can even, maybe in a future thing, I can actually take some photographs and I'll show you even my own security stuff. I can take some photos of my own stuff and you'll see what I've had to do.
I think that would be very interesting to people. Very interesting, because, you know, a lot of people live in the middle of the U.S. like I do, but not a lot of people live in South Africa or have ever visited there. So it's inherently more interesting to the people that we're talking to. We want you as whites to identify, you listening, with all the whites worldwide and understand what they're going through and understand that a lot of this doesn't really have anything to do with the language or the geography. It's purely a racial differential that always results in this sort of an interaction between the races when they're forced together. And of course, we know who forces them together. Yeah. So would you say are you in a straight forward middle class area, or is it upper middle class or lower middle class, or how would you characterize it? How does the class system work in South Africa?
Alex, I would say I'm middle class. I wouldn't say upper middle class. I think just middle class is fine enough, because I think that will be more accurate. Upper middle class is
that means something different in Britain than it does in the U.S. It means something in Britain. Middle class is what would be called upper class in the U.S. So I don't know if South Africa takes after that or not. But
I would say compared to you, we would call it middle class. It might even be. I think middle class America and middle class South Africa. I think I'm equating it about right. I'm not thinking in any British terms. I think this is about the best way. Because I'm kind of saying middle class of whites in South Africa. I'm in that sort of range. I'm not really upper middle class.
Well, Jan, let's get back to how the COVID has affected things, yeah. whatever sticks out to you. What are the most remarkable points about how COVID has affected South Africa, or how the hoax slash, I don't call it a hoax because people are dying from some virus, but how the political class is there has seized on it and what they've done with it?
They've grabbed this hook, line, and sinker. Initially, they used science a lot, and they used that junk science that came from England, from that Neil Ferguson guy. And then they seem to have had non-white scientists, Indians, just like those East Indians you've got in America. Those are the ones we call Indians here. Now, that, there have been some of them that were giving their scientific analysis, and government was listening to them. And they came forward with this whole lockdown thing. So the government said, you know, we got to go stop this because people are going to die. But not many people actually got the disease. They are testing. They're testing. And I just remembered something that I must tell you. And they started testing. And the last I saw about a week ago, we had about 12,000 people out of a population. Our population now is estimated to be 59 million. So out of 59 million blacks and whites, we've got about 12,000 COVID cases, but we're not testing it very fast. And only about 230 or so have actually died, that they say have died. But, again, you don't know how good the counting is, et cetera. And out of the 12,000, I saw that more than 6,800 had survived. So it's not, you know, it's everything that we know about it. But the government seized on it to go into extreme measures of lockdown, and they even called in the army. But the army, I never saw the army here where we were, though I was looking for the army and I was talking to people. It seems the army ended up in the townships. Most of the blacks still live in the townships, though there are a lot more blacks in the suburbs than have been in the past. But the vast majority of the black population still lives in the townships, and the army went and started trying to control them. They are hard to control. Now, that's the other thing, is that they don't care, and they sent the army in. Then the police started doing the rounds. I've personally only seen the police drive past my house twice, but I've got a camera that's been running for weeks that I need to, one of these wildlife cameras. I actually bought it in the USA, and I set it up on a tree here by my house so that I can actually see everything that goes past, because I used to do that for crime, and I'm going to pull it off and look through the pictures, and if I find any interesting pictures, I'll show you.
A trail cam is what
Yes, and the beauty is that it can take photos at night, and that's the lovely part about it. So anyway, I've only seen the police twice, but I noticed that the police may have been here at other times. But the government seized on this thing big time, and they continued and they extended the lockdown for another 2 weeks. So we had 5 weeks of, they've called it level five. So they say we're going to go from level five to level four to level three to level two to level one. And then it's going to be end of lockdown. But it looks almost like every level is at least a month. So it looks like we're going to be in lockdown until the end of winter. And now we are entering winter. It's starting to get a bit chilly here. Temperatures outside can be about, I saw the other evening, about 5 degrees Celsius in the evening. So that's a temperature in my area. We'd have to see what 5 degrees Celsius.
People should remember that South Africa is south of the equator and has opposite seasons, as Australia does and South America does, to North America and Europe.
So in Fahrenheit, that would be 41.
Okay, is that your low or your high? Your low.
This is our lowest low in the early morning of the hour, in the early mornings. So that's the lowest of the low.
Now you're in Johannesburg around there?
Yes, correct.
And so do you get any snow where you, like on your house, do you get any snow on it, or is it just up in the mountains around there?
No. Interestingly enough, the climate must have changed, because my mother used to tell me that in the 1920s and 1930s, there used to be snow in Johannesburg. And it used to snow right up until the 1960s, but the snow became less and less. Snow no longer occurs in Johannesburg. I've only seen snow flakes, just little flakes falling down once in the 35 years that I've lived in Johannesburg.
So what is like your lowest daily low, would you say?
Our lowest lows that we get at
part of winter
is minus two. That would be 28.4 in Fahrenheit.
Okay, so you guys bottom out at just under freezing sometimes.
Yes, but there are colder parts of South Africa. The Free State gets to be very cold, but because it's dry, there's no snow. There are parts of the Free State that can hit minus 10. That is 14 Fahrenheit. There are parts of the Free State is nasty. The main snow is always on the Drakensberg Mountains and to the south of it. But you do get times in winter where snow physically falls in the further south, somewhere sort of in the south of the Free State, north of the Cape. You do get some snow annually where it actually falls like you see in the U.S. You might get
I've got a couple of questions for you. Have you been all over South Africa? Like, to how many total states are there, and have you been to them all and basically seen the entire country, would you say?
I've been around a bit. I've seen many different parts of it. The places I've been in the northeastern Transvaal, which is the most beautiful part of South Africa. I've been down to the west to Durban, which is also very lovely. I've been to the Cape. I have been a little bit almost everywhere. I won't say I've not been in every town, but I've been around to all the major different places. I'd say the place that I've gone to the least is the far west, the far northern part of the west coast. And that tends to be rather desert and miserable. But I'd say I've been roughly to about 80, 90% of South Africa. So
okay,
I have an idea
good.
Of it.
I was going to ask you, and I don't remember if I asked you this before, probably not, but have you been to, what is it, Oranienburg?
Oh, Orania, yes.
Orania, yeah.
And I've got photos of it. So if you want to see it, I can show you the photos of...
I'm embarrassed. I can't remember if we talked about that before or not. You must have mentioned it a little.
I'm sure we've mentioned it. And you know what I'd like to do if I get a chance in the next year? I would like to actually go down to Orania for a day or two, because it's been improving, Alex.
Do your own report on that and get lots of photos and just show people what's going on there. I think that's always fascinating, because you would do it from a non-anti-white point of view. The mass media, like British media typically, will report on it every couple of years, but it's always anti-white in the framing.
And Alex, I did speak to somebody who lives in Orania now, and I'll just tell you briefly. He said to me, it's going well. He says it's going well, and they got whites doing physical labor. The money that they're being paid, they get about 200 rand an hour, which is a good rate for South Africa. It's a pretty damn good rate.
Rand are like what, 6-8 to the dollar? Something like that?
It's about 18 to
18,
the dollar.
Okay.
So they're doing physical labor. They're doing all their own stuff. Even when I was there, it was pretty good. There is a little tidbit that I'll tell you, Alex, that will be of interest to you. When I at the moment, the total number of whites in Orania is 1,600. And people always look at that number and they say, well, you know, clearly Orania is not a big deal. And you know, the 4.6 million whites haven't moved there. But I'll tell you two quick things. One is that there are other little Orania type things that also exist now, because Orania is in a special place. It's far away from everybody, and that was a whole deliberate thing to do. It was Orania originally was a experiment that an Afrikaans professor came up with. He said, in order to test whites properly, you need to take them and put them in a very remote region all by themselves. so that they don't have contact with other people, so that they are totally isolated. And so it is in one of the most isolated parts of South Africa, and not a very nice place to live. But so it's deliberately put in a very difficult place to get to, which is one of the negatives about it. But that is why other Oranje type things have come up.
And then I'm interested, that's the first time I've ever heard. Are they satellites of Oranje, or are they in entirely different locations?
They are different. They are different, and they run differently. And I have photographs of one of them.
Okay, so, how many of them are there? What are their names? Where are they located? Are they secrets?
They aren't well known. There's the one place is a farm to the west of Pretoria. It's got some kind of Christian name. It's called Philadelphia Ark, which is Afrikaans for Philadelphia, and Ark is like Noah's Ark. So that's a Christian thing, and actually it's very well run. I've been there. I like it.
I'm playing the journalist here. I'm trying to elicit information from you. How exactly is it like Oranje? Is it de facto all white, or is it by principle or by investment buy-in all white? On what basis is it all white, or is it all white?
It is all white. What it is it's a guy who has an engineer who had a farm, and the engineer decided, he's very Christian, he decided to start building a place where whites could come to, poor whites. And there has been a demand because of these whites who ended up in these camps. There are people who've tried to take whites out of these camps and put them in a better place so that they're not among blacks. So there have been a lot of whites who used farmland and other land that they had, and they made like tiny little settlements for the poor whites to come to. And this guy has got one of the most successful, probably the most successful of it. When I was there in 2015, there were about 500 white people, and they were living on his farm, and they built little wooden houses for the whites, and they work on the farm. There are white men and women, and they work on the farm, and it's totally white, totally Christian. But it's the one Christian thing I would not want to criticize. Truly, these people are doing a white thing, and they stick to whites only. You walk in there, and there are no blacks there. Everything's done by whites.
So it's a deliberate sort of ministry to the whites, the poor whites of South Africa.
Absolutely.
What specific religion is, or what denomination is the fellow running it?
I think it's just the normal Protestant type of stuff.
What is the normal? Is that the Dutch Reformed Lutheran Church or something?
Yes, Dutch Reformed, more or less. Yeah.
So, okay, is that Lutheran, or is the name Lutheran isn't in it, or?
I think there could be a Lutheran aspect. You're moving into territory I can't answer you exactly.
That's very interesting. What I was going to ask, and I should maybe know this, but the super poor whites that we see, the pictures of their squatter camps and their kids on mattresses out in the open air, where are those mainly located in one place, and where is that? Or are they in multiple places?
Alex, the only true squatter camp that's a legally defined squatter camp is Munsieville, and it's far to the west of Johannesburg. And that's a place where that is a proper defined squatter camp where whites live on the edge of a black township. And the squatter camp officially is blacks and whites. But in reality, even there, the blacks and whites have got like a bit of a demarcation. So there's an area where all the white houses are together, and then the blacks are right next to them.
Is it those people that are being drawn to this ARC project?
Lots of whites have been trying to get other whites out of that place. Lots of them. They've tried lots of different projects. Some have been partly successful. Another thing that whites have also been doing is that whites have actually have actually been trying to educate and help those whites so that they can physically get a job and get out of there and live somewhere else. And they were very successful with that, Alex. They at a point they told me that the camp had been at its peak. It had 9,000 whites in it. And when I went there the last time, which is a few years ago, they were down to about 200. They managed to get, and let me tell you another secret about that camp, is do you know that there are people living in that camp? Quite a lot
Munceyville,
of
Munceyville, repeat Munceyville. The name.
Yes. Do you know that there are whites living in that camp who actually had jobs? So they live in this camp where they don't pay rent and they go to work every day and
well,
they earn
the
money.
Thing.
Alex, the whites are not as useless as you think, as they've been, as people have, sort of drummed them up to be. I walked in there. I still have photos. I can find lots of photos for future shows. Now, I will show you photos that I took within the last 5 years. Alex, I would walk in there and you'd see a husband and a wife and their children, and they live in a miserable little wooden thing, and they've got their layout and they've got a washing machine and they've got they're busy washing their clothes and their washing machine and they're doing stuff, and you know, the man's got a job. And what they did is they used Munceyville and the fact that they don't pay rent, etc., and they used it as a way to get money. And then when they had enough money, they fucked off out of the camp. And they did the same with their children. If their children could go to school, they would get their children. All the children in Munceyville went to school. And as soon as the children are ready and they leave school, they try and get a job. And they also fuck off out of Munceyville. Let me tell you, once the whites really put their heads together, they solve lots of problems. So when you go there, they're not as bad off. I walked around in their houses and I spoke to them. And do you know how they do the electricity in Munceyville? Is there was one guy got an electricity sort of connection. And then what they did was all the whites put electric cable through to his house, and you've got all these electrical cables coming from the one electrical connection going to everybody's house, and they've all got electricity and lights and so forth. People were sitting in their little houses watching TV, and then this one guy pays the bill, and everybody comes every month and they chip in, and everybody shares one electricity source between like 200 little houses.
Not bad.
You know, it shows you what is possible. When you go to these places and you see some of them, look, you do get the downside. You do get whites who are on drugs. You do get whites who are criminals. But I mean, they're down and out. And most of them, large numbers of them, Alex, managed to pick themselves up and get themselves out of there. Large numbers of them managed to.
Sure.
So that, but you know, when people are looking for money, then they always like carry on and on about, you know, these people aren't surviving, but they don't tell all the success stories. There are lots and lots of whites who tried all kinds of different mechanisms. There are even whites who tried to buy like a farm. I know somebody who tried to buy a farm and then brought whites in to give them a place to stay, make them work, and then educate them enough to get a job and go. There are lots of things whites have tried. I can't say how successful all are, but they've.
Jan, you mentioned the one ARC project in addition to Urania, but you said there were multiple others. So what are the other ones?
Lots of other ones. They can sometimes be very small as well, Alex. You can get like a place where somebody's got like 10 or 15 whites staying, and they maybe have two little buildings, you know. So there are lots. Most of them don't have names. Some of them are a bit dodgy, but all in all, there have been all kinds of attempts, lots and lots. Some have worked for a while and then failed. There are lots. There is another place next to Pretoria on Pretoria East. It's called Kleinfontein. So I'd say the big ones are Urania, Philadelphia, ARC, and Kleinfontein. So a Philadelphia Ark is in on the west of Pretoria on a farm. Kleinfontein is on Pretoria East. So the heart of the whites, especially the Afrikaans speakers, is actually Pretoria. Despite it being the capital, there are large numbers of whites there. And so Pretoria is the place from which lots of interesting things come. And you must never forget the importance of Pretoria. There are lots of whites there, including poor and lower middle class, lower middle class, etc. Lots of them. You remember that stuff that we did about the whites who fought the blacks in the streets?
Yes, I do. Oh, yeah.
That was Pretoria West. There's a large number of whites. Okay. So, yeah. Okay. Bit of background.
Excellent. Okay. Well, I think it would be wonderful if you went over to Urania and got some pictures and talked to people and did a full report on that.
I would like to plan for that. But what I can do for some of our upcoming shows is I can grab some, I'll make some notes of some photos. Then I'll bring some photos for some of our shows and I will show you Urania. I can actually show you a bunch of interesting things in some of our shows. I'll bring some photos for us.
Okay. Do you have to buy in to become part of Urania? Like if you wanted to join it, would you have to have a certain amount of investment income or could you just show up and say, hey, I want to participate. I'll agree to whatever your terms are and start at the bottom and I just want to be here. Does that work?
Alex, Urania is the most difficult one to get into. It's got a very fixed structure. It's based on a business model. And you have to apply.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I know that he bought the whole thing or whatever, but I'm just wondering about if they're even taking new people or how.
Now, before I forget, let me tell you the most interesting thing that you'll like. Alex, officially Urania has 1,600 people there currently. But I was talking to a guy who lives there, and he told me that every month they get 12,000 applications per month of
Excellent.
Whites who want to go there. So he actually, this is a little bit of a conspiracy theory, but it's a conspiracy theory from someone who lives there. So I don't want to say more about this guy. I had lovely chats with him. He said to me that he believes, this is his theory, he believes that Urania is under some kind of government pressure to not grow too fast because that would then be something that the government would take action against. So he says that they get 12,000 applications a month and very few are accepted. And he thinks that it's because of government pressure on Urania. So, you know, Alex, let's take 12,000 and let's say 12,000 for a year, you know, you are looking at 144,000 whites, almost 150,000 whites are interested in going to Urania every year.
And Alex, put that in the context. What is the white population of South Africa as a whole?
White population is 4.6 million. So,
and if this guy is telling the truth, then a considerable small fraction of that every year would move there, and pretty soon there'd be half the whites living there, probably.
Alex, for
generation.
Sure. For sure. You would probably be looking, you know, in 10 years' time, you'd have a third of the white population would be there in 10 years' time if they were allowed to move. And what I will also tell you is I know some guys from other groups like the Boer Legion and others. They recently went down to the Cape. And there are one or two other towns, existing towns, that they have been moving into and starting to set up their own stuff. So all across South Africa in different places, mainly the Cape and also here in the Pretoria area, you are starting to get what you could call whites-only settlements. Whites are busy, Alex. They are busy. There are many people.
Okay.
There are many people. And like the guy I spoke to in Urania, he used to have a nice business here in Johannesburg, and his business went downhill, and he moved to Urania, and he bought a house. And he told me, you've said many times something about if you want to know the value of property, you know, have like whites only property or something in America?
Yeah. What I've said was if they set aside one state, like a nasty mountainous windy state, like Wyoming, for whites only, there would be a land rush there.
Now, Alex.
So desirable to live among whites only that they won't allow it.
Now, let me tell you something. The property prices in Orania are high. The property prices are high and the property prices are going up and they're building more stuff there.
here's my question,
exactly,
John. How much
you were saying?
Yeah. How much exact room do they have overall, like square miles?
Now that's interesting. I would have to go and find out. I'd have to actually.
Now you said that they moved out, so they moved out away to comparatively undesirable part that's far away from others. But how much? What is their potential for expansion geographically? I guess my question. People should understand, all this is being done in a 90% black country where there's a legal threat, let alone the media pressure that can be leveraged. So what whites ultimately need is legal protection for their exclusivity. And that's what the Jews want to deny most of all. So eventually whites would have to fight for it. But short of that, they've shown what whites can do to move to this place, develop a town that's all white. Whites do all of the labor. There's no such thing as free labor, because when you try to live like a king and employ 15 blacks, well, guess what? Over time, those blacks develop agitators who start demanding rights, or the Jews do in their name, and then you get what we've got now. They're liberated, and they start crushing people who are going to serve you, end up you serving them or you being afraid of them and having to erect 10-foot fences to guard against them. So best if whites do all the work themselves.
Dead on. And if whites do everything themselves, then you don't have the problem of blacks among you who bring the crime with them. You know, that's the other thing.
Exactly.
And you just – many points.
So this is very fascinating about the legal basis of this, the potential for expansion, and the fact that if that's true, that 12,000 a month are applying, that's fantastic, amazing, but also predictable. It should be like that.
Alex, I'm telling you, if there weren't all these threats and problems, whites would really be doing lots of different things. And
imagine if out of nowhere within a decade they would have over a million people living there, if that's even possible.
Alex, this is the thing: is that the a lot of those areas. I must find out. I'm just making some notes for myself of things to find out for you, but I'll get back to you on that thing. But I suspect that they've got quite a big piece of territory. Whether you could put 100,000 people there, I don't know. But I'll get some more details. I'll speak to my contact there. But Alex, you know, if things were left to themselves, whites would do so many things. There are so many things we could do, even in our current situation here, even in the towns. There are so many things we could do if we were allowed to. Most of our problems, Alex, most of our problems is that we are not allowed to do things. Even things like crime, Alex, crime would not be a problem.
Crime.
You know, if we were allowed the same laws that we had under apartheid to shoot somebody who's a threat to you, you know, somebody, you see someone with a gun in your yard and you shoot him. You know, if we were allowed even simple things like that, Alex, there'd be no crime in no time at all. It's the big, big, big thing about South Africa is not that whites cannot do things. It is that whites are not allowed to do things.
Whites
are
oppressed.
That is the big thing. That is the big thing.
Yes. Whites are oppressed by law. They are prevented from defending themselves.
Bingo.
That's what so-called gun control is all about, or whatever version of it you have out there. They don't want whites defending themselves. They want whites open to predation by Jews and people of color.
Yes. And the laws are made so that the people of color – are able to commit crimes, even murder, and the government took away the death penalty. Why did they take the death penalty away? It was one of the first things they did when they took over the country. And I've been saying to people all these years, the real reason they took away the death penalty was because they didn't want their buddies to be shot by whites. That's all. That's why they took away the death penalty, because whites would kill them.
They let their fellow blacks feed on white people, essentially, just as what you would say in nature with animals. They're feeding on another species. They're eating them.
Exactly. Parasites. So, lots of things. Another quick COVID-19 thing for you, Alex, is, before I forget, Oranje. Oranje has got like a little tourism industry. And because of their fame around the world, they get quite a lot of foreign tourists. And I asked my friend, I said to him, how are things going there? And I've been, like I said, I've been there and it's nice. They've got a place by a river. They've got chalets. I'll get all the photos and stuff for you and show you what it looked like 10 years ago. And so you've got all these, you've got people pouring into this little town. And so the guy was saying to me, by the way, that they're getting lots of German tourists. How cool is that? How cool is that? Germans
Very
coming.
Cool.
Germans coming to Africa, seeing all the blacks, and then they pop into this one place where there's just whites. I'm sure the Germans must make some remarks and have some thoughts when they leave South Africa.
Oh, yeah.
So the other thing about lockdown, before I forget, what happens when you take blacks and you fucking lock them all into the townships? The first thing that happens is crime drops like a rock. Murder drops like a rock. Crime and murder have fallen to such a degree, Alex. Even the Minister of Police had to like try and explain this white hating black piece of shit. Had to explain, why it is that murder has dropped by like 90%. So it's because you lock them in the fucking townships like you did under apartheid. Basically, lockdown is proven. This is one of the examples of what you could call an own goal. By locking everybody up, there were blacks who proudly said, well, now we're going to show those whites what it's like to live in a township where you can't move around. And actually, for the most part, most of the whites are not really complaining. Most of them went onto the internet and are doing their work and their business through the internet. And the only thing that irks them is that they can't go out to exercise. Otherwise, the whites actually aren't that concerned by the whole thing. But the thing is, what happens to the blacks? Well, the blacks stop stealing so much and stop murdering. It basically proves apartheid right. There used to be laws. There used to be laws in South Africa and also Rhodesia, Alex. There used to be laws against what they called loitering.
Yeah.
And if the police saw somebody standing around on a street corner for an hour or so, then they just come and they just grab them and arrest them. And of course, the Jews are screeching, oh no, human rights and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? Go and look at the crime rates and murder rates in South Africa in the days when they did that. And you had like less than 200 people being murdered a year. It was like 185 murders a year. Now it's like 18,000 a year, something like that. I think the last is close to that. So lots of things that the government has done that has gone wrong. That's actually not positive for them. And
that's funny. So COVID-19 lockdown in South Africa vindicates apartheid. Just proof if blacks aren't allowed to circulate and loiter and case and look for opportunities to steal, etc., then the crime rate goes way down.
Alex, the crime rate has dropped to such a degree. We've got our private security companies that patrol here. One especially in our area is very good. The crime has gone down to such a degree that the company that patrols here every day, and that a vehicle will pass my door on average, like I think if I said the vehicle would pass my door at least five times every day, it will give you an idea of how often they patrol here. Well, they now only patrol like once or twice in the day. And at night, I know where they keep their vehicles, and I can see they never even patrol at night. That is completely unknown, totally unnatural for us. We need to be, in the past, when the blacks are around, you need to patrol at all times of day and night. But it's fantastic. The only downside is that by keeping all the blacks in the townships, the blacks might be hit by a big crime wave when we get to the end of the lockdown. But the blacks also, the government, I also think, Alex, that the government believes, I think that the government believes that blacks might die from COVID. And I think that is the real reason, the real unspoken reason why they're going crazy on lockdown. And they even made cigarette purchases illegal. So I assume that's for lungs, for because COVID affects your lungs. But I don't know why they stopped drinking, because I would have thought that if the blacks are drunk and happy, then at least they'll stay in the townships. If they're sober in the townships, they may want to run around and fuck other women and do other things. So they stopped cigarettes and liquor. You can't buy a bottle of liquor in South Africa. Now, that has created, it's like American Prohibition, that's created a secret black market, and people are running around selling illegal cigarettes. Some of the government ministers might even be running the groups. They might be running this. They may be making money out of illegal stuff that they made illegal. Even in a suburb next to me, blacks bust into a liquor store. They needed liquor. The prices of pineapples in South Africa have doubled because everybody's trying to figure out how to make liquor at home. So they've also warned that you can get yourself killed or injured from your illicit liquor. But Alex, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, this liquor thing, which I think will also be a big thing among some of the whites, I wouldn't be surprised if out of this, that you find some new businesses coming out of this thing eventually. So I think that lockdown is going to have so many strange side effects that, especially if whites are involved in it, it might even turn into a fucking industry afterwards. I think there are some weird things that can come out of this. I also think that there are two sides to lockdown. The one is that the government, for the first time, gets to put us under almost martial law. So I think the black government is loving it. They're loving it. They're getting to exercise the army, and they're getting to see how they can, you know, show the whites, we're the boss and we're going to put you in your place. But I think that a lot of that is going to backfire. I've noticed that many of the whites, even the most liberal, even some of these Shabbos Goy, like the Ruperts that we discussed, they've been talking about how this is destroying industry and that the lockdown must end. And there's been a growing kind of a lockdown rebellion and simmering tensions on lockdown. And it's pissing off whites, even the English-speaking whites who are very sheep-like and very obedient. Even they are getting irritated. And a guy down the road from me, he runs a section of the Neighborhood Watch. And he told me that recently they had to rush, even with this lockdown in level 4, they had to rush because a black had jumped over somebody's wall. So they rushed in the night to try and catch the black, but they were unsuccessful. And he told me that actually it's illegal, that if the police had intercepted them, they could all have been arrested. So they're still trying to fight a little bit of crime, and they're doing it in this risk. And I can tell you that just generally speaking to my neighbors, tension is growing, and people, you know, people's businesses and livelihoods are sinking, and it's forcing whites together. And I must tell you, I think it's the best thing ever. I think lots of good things will come out of this thing. And for me, I like this because I said to people, this is the closest that we're going to get to a war without actual shooting. So we've got lockdown, we've got martial law, we've got the police who'll catch you, etc. And I made use of this time. The camera was one of my tricks. Other tricks was to jump up and walk around and look and monitor my neighbors and whatever. And I was also a little bit naughty, Alex. I did a little bit more. And I did things because I've been trying to look at this and use this as a learning curve so that I have a better understanding. You know, this would be what things would be like in a war situation. The only difference is we don't yet have army actually patrolling us. But all of this is good exercise, very good exercise. And lots of tension here, lots of tension. And a final thing, and I apologize for just dashing through so many things, Alex. But are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Sorry. And one other friend of mine who lives on a farm, he was also getting very stressed about lockdown. And it seems to me from my discussions with him that he decided to buy himself a rifle because he was getting very stressed about, you know, are the blacks going to attack us? And then he told me an interesting thing. He told me that that he'd bought a rifle and it was going to be delivered to him by a courier company, and that all deliveries of military of weapons have been stopped by the government. So his rifle cannot arrive, and the only rifles that can move are those that are related to the safari industry. But otherwise, no weapons are allowed to move. And I myself can't wait to get to a gun shop at the end of this lockdown. I've been doing a lot of thinking, and I need to get a fucking rifle in the next year, definitely. So just to give you a little bit of background.
Yeah, okay. Great. Wonderful report.
So, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said, and I definitely know that all the people listening want to hear updates on Irania and what's going on there, because that's stuff that I've not seen reported in the broader press, that there are any other projects that are sort of like it, and especially that it has literally five figures of applications every month, and more about how the government might be suppressing that either implicitly or explicitly with laws or implicitly with veiled threats. So we'll stay updated on that, you who are listening to this. And now maybe we've gone on a long time, but maybe I'll tell a little bit about how COVID has affected my area.
Tell us.
And then we'll wrap it up for today. Where I am, we had stuff shut down middle, late March, shut down for about 6 weeks, and then it started reopening basically about maybe 10 days ago. Uh-huh. And we had, you know, the little location where I am, Kirksville, 17,000 people, copied the state, which copied the feds in terms of shutdown. And then finally they got to where they left it up to the individual place to reopen. But the stores, we had the food still open. Now we've had some of the thrift stores reopen. Some of them require you to wear masks. I went up to Iowa, yeah, and they were like, one Goodwill there was barely open. And I was looking around there and some other places, and there was hardly anyone in there. I guess Autumn has been particularly hard hit. Someone told me they had 350 cases up there and a couple deaths I saw. And down here, I don't know. The last I had heard, there was like 11 cases. There's probably more than that, but the people had recovered. We had three people in the Manor Care, which is an elderly home that actually is on a couple acres that was behind my grandparents' property, that my grandfather actually sold them the 2 acres. Three old people in there got it, but they recovered from it. So it's been around a little, and a lot of the older people are wearing masks. But I went out to the major flea market around here, 35 miles from here, Rutledge.
Yeah.
An open air flea market. There's all kinds of stuff. It's a really fun place. It was absolutely jam packed. And that had been shut. It's like once a month, and it was open in March. It was shut down in April because of COVID. And this was the reopening. Almost no one there was wearing masks. 99.5% white attendees, no one wearing masks. Everyone really happy.
Nice.
The Amish Mennonite place even sold out of food. There were so many people there. And it was just awesome. It's a really wonderful bit of Americana that's not polluted with minorities and just stupidity. And what I just learned the other day is there's going to be a new flea market someone is creating just out west of Novinger a few miles. So it's like maybe 10 miles from where I am or even closer. That's going to kind of counterpose to Rutledge, because Rutledge is once a month. So this would be like the, instead of the second weekend Saturday of the month, it'd be like the fourth and fifth, if there is a fifth in some months, as there is this month in May 2020. They're going to try to build the same type of deal. So maybe there's slightly different kinds of white businesses that are forming as a result of this pressure. And anyway, these things, much more, you know, buying and selling without any paper slips involved.
Yes.
You see what I mean?
Nice.
Another way to keep the Jew hand out of the white pocket.
Yes.
People that have gotten their $1,200 checks from the government and have really increased online spending. So these are some of the effects. Now, I know the reason I mentioned Goodwill, I know, was to say that at least four Goodwill in Iowa are permanently shut down. So this policy of lockdown has negatively affected a lot of smaller type businesses. And Goodwill is even, I don't know if it's a chain, but it's kind of nationally, it's a national thing. So they're throwing a lot of people who are low IQ, borderline able to work at all, throwing them out of work. For really no good reason.
Terrible.
You know, so that's kind of the downside. And of course, a lot of the restaurants in the service sector, they've been forced to either try to do, you know, drive-through type stuff, which they're not really equipped for. So I don't know what effect it'll have in restaurants. I really don't eat out much, so I don't think about it. But the chain fast food, of course, is open. But the more of the mom and pop and individual places are definitely feeling some stress from it. But unlike you, we don't have a lockdown for people's physical activity outside. So a lot more people have been out walking their dogs and just running generally,
nice.
Picking up jogging and stuff. So that's about what I would see here. But really, it's more the older people and particularly the older women who are the ones wearing the masks and seem to be worried about it or feeling almost self-important because they're out wearing masks. But I think the whole mask thing is stupid. But some of the Goodwills that reopen might require you to wear a mask to go in. I'm just saying thrift stores because I don't really go into a whole lot of other type of stores. But if I'm looking for something, I'll go in a thrift store. So if they're shut, I might notice it. But, you know, all the big box national chains didn't close. They were always open. So,
Really? A lot of the national chains? Even well, not just fast food.
I'm not open. Anything that's like a Home Depot. We have Home Depot, Hobby Lobby. I've never been in them, but Lowe's, this type of giant store that even in my area we have, I don't think they ever shut down.
Wow.
It was just the smaller food places shut down, the non-essential stuff. The banks may have gone to purely drive through instead of having to lobby, but then they've reopened too. So that's kind of how it's been. I don't think most people are overly worried about it, but then the ones who believe the government and believe the media have been more worried about it. But it's not like, I don't think in my county there have been any deaths from it. And the surrounding ones, at least a few weeks ago, didn't even have any cases. They probably have a few now, but you know. Oh, one funny little story I did see was one of these Congolese they brought up here who was, I guess, working at Milan, spelled like Milan in Italy, but pronounced Milan, about 20 miles from Kirksville where I am. One of the black Congolese women, I guess, was working there pregnant, had her kid and strangled it and is now arraigned for murder. She like drowned it in the toilet or something. Unbelievable.
These people have their own fucked up lives and their own fucked up problems that have got nothing to do with us.
They bring more and more Congolese in here. I was in the post office the other day and he's trying to explain to the guy to, hey, drop the letter in the slot outside the proper office part. He's like, French, no English. You know, so these aren't even the Congolese who've been there. They initially come here and they all got smartphones. And they all have their French to English translation. Well, these guys are so new, that they don't even speak any English. The other ones have been here long enough, they've started to learn English. And so they just keep, continue importing Congolese into this area.
Terrible, hey? Must be from the French Congo, yeah.
Yeah, French Congo. I don't know. Is there a non-French Congo? I don't know.
There was a Belgian Congo, a French Congo, and apparently also a little bit of a Portuguese Congo.
Yeah, but a Belgian Congo would still speak French, I would think. I don't know of any Dutch-speaking, like Walloons.
Or is that Holland? Now you mention an interesting thing.
The ones all here speak French.
Okay. Yeah.
So I don't know of a heck of a lot more to say about my area than that. I would have to – probably there's a few things that don't occur to me. But basically, yeah, they got people wearing masks, and the local government kind of shut stuff down for non-essential activity. But they hadn't ever fined anybody or said – I have seen a hell of a lot more cops all the time driving around. I don't know what the reason for that is. But other than a little testing, they built like a little – covering outside the hospital in case they had an overflow. It's all just gay stuff that comes from the media. It's not based in any kind of reality at all.
And the police were easy on the people. You don't have anyone who is arrested.
A story I saw a couple weeks ago said they had not issued one citation for people disobeying the shutdown. So
nice.
I had, people up during turkey season, and the turkey hunting season went on as normal, and there was no problem with that. And a couple times we burned some stuff in the front yard. No one said anything about that. So you're supposed to be 6 feet apart or whatever, but no one really cares. And they more or less canceled the college, Truman State. They seem to have canceled the rest of the classes, but I started in the last 2 days seeing students come back into town. I'm not sure what they're doing because the semester would be over anyway. So but you're starting to see a return of some of them. But overall, it just shut down basically, I guess, the thrift stores and certain restaurants. But I'll tell you, a lot of people, this is true, you've probably seen this from where you are. In the U.S., they started sending out these checks and letting people get unemployment. A lot of these people, in fact, like more than half of them, are making more money off unemployment than they were at their jobs.
No, I don't know this.
They don't want to go back to it. Now, no. I think the unemployment only lasts a certain amount of time. The key really in this whole thing, looking at a national, not the Kirksville level or the Missouri level, is the Fed has added, the central bank of the U.S. has added a couple of trillion minimum to its balance sheets. And actually it's going to end up being more like 4 or 6 trillion.
Wow.
So we're just flushing in. I mean, the guy is on, I saw him on YouTube yesterday, Jay Powell or whatever is on there saying, the guy interviewing him, I think this was on 60 Minutes, he said, so basically you're just flooding the economy with money. And he's like, we're flooding the economy with money. They just printed shitloads of money and flushed it into the economy. And this is why we who are part of Team White have to really protect ourselves, because that money is eventually going to show up in higher prices. First, it will show up in lower prices, but then it will result eventually in greater inflation. So you have to be careful. And I'm personally recommending Bitcoin and gold as ways to preserve your purchasing power, and to a lesser extent, silver. I personally Excellent. Think gold is better than silver. But the key is you can't just create out of thin air trillions of dollars and think that's not going to have very serious effects on the economy. But for right now, the people got all this money. They're out, they're online, they're running around buying, and what have you. And I don't know. Jan, I honest to God don't know. We had the idea of a universal basic income interjected into the public discussion by former presidential candidate Andrew Yang.
No.
And you'll probably remember that. The idea every American who's an adult should get a check for $1,000 or $2,000 a month. Well, let me tell you, we're not that far from that being seriously tested. We have now a national IQ where people don't even understand the most basic facts about economics, and they think you can just print endless number of monies and everybody will then be rich.
Which
and
is
it won't
just
have
rubbish.
Any effect on prices, but these people don't understand that the value of paper money always goes to zero. These people cannot conceive, because they've never seen it and they don't read and they don't know history. They can't conceive that, I have to pay $100 for a hamburger, or I have to pay $1 million for a shack or something.
Yes.
I mean, they can't understand what inflation actually is because they haven't seen it at any high level. And the reason they can get away with printing money for a certain amount is that the dollar is the world reserve currency, so that other central banks around the world are doing the exact same thing the U.S. central bank is doing, and actually even worse. So those people would rather have U.S. dollars than whatever the currency is in Venezuela or in Argentina. So they will debase their currency so much that inflation shoots up, you know, their money loses 30% of its purchasing power within a couple of months, and they start looking around for dollars. So that keeps us from having so much of the same inflation in the U.S. And in fact, we actually have deflation more than inflation at the moment, but it will end eventually in some kind of hyperinflation. So these people are increasingly turning to genuine hard money, which is Bitcoin, because there's only X. You understand the concept of hard money, Jan.
Yes.
There's only 21 million Bitcoin that will ever exist. And what have I just said? The U.S. Treasury, the Fed just printed $2 trillion. That's a conservative estimate. It's actually much more. $2 trillion.
Insane.
But only 21 million, million. Do you understand the difference between million versus trillion?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Infinitely more paper money versus this hard digital currency that only has 21 million that will ever exist by the time they're all mined in like 2140 or 80 or whatever it is, 100 years from now. So you got to be in some kind of money that will not go to zero in value, whereas all paper money eventually does. So people listening to Team White, you got to be real, real careful. Personally, I do think we should all own some Bitcoin and some gold and probably some silver too, if you prefer silver.
Yeah, I agree with you on the careful. I agree with you on the Bitcoin and the gold. Silver, I've also seen some people believe in it, but In general, I don't know of anybody who's really come out well with silver.
It's a
weird kind of a market.
Silver is out of what it's historically been in proportion to gold. Like they'll usually say like 16 to 1. And right now it's like 100 or 80 or 120 to 1. So they think it's going to go back to being the same relation, which would greatly increase its price. But you listen to silver bugs or even gold bugs endlessly. Oh, silver's going to be 50 an ounce. Silver's going to be 500 an ounce. Well, it never is.
That's the thing.
It will probably go up. It's not bad. But if you acquire much silver, it becomes very heavy very quickly. I think gold is better than silver, personally.
And
gold right now is over 1,700, the spot price. And Bitcoin, as I'm looking at it, is just over 9,000. It's dropped several hundred today. It looks like it might go under 9,000 instead of over 10,000. So probably a pretty good opportunity to buy. But then again, you might hold on and wait and see if it'll go back down further, because basically all the smart people on YouTube think after the halving that just took place last week, that they think it's going to go up a great deal in the next year to 2 years. A lot of them think it's going to, Max Kaiser is talking about it going to 400,000 per Bitcoin. Right now it's right over 9,000. But is that a guarantee he's right? There are no guarantees. You make your own decision and you suffer your losses or you enjoy your wins. It's on you. I'm saying personally, I think it's a good thing to have.
And Alex, are you thinking long-term? In your advice to people,
do not day trade. That stuff is all set up to screw you. What you want to do is just buy a Bitcoin and don't put it away and look at it again in 10 years and see where it is. Okay. Do not get on there and think you're going to trade up and down. 99% of the people who do that lose money, and 98% of them lie about whether they're winning or losing. Don't believe what people say on that stuff. Most of them are losers. Not most of them, almost all of them, not as particularly in this stuff. There's other stuff, maybe you could do it a little if you knew, but that's not my area of expertise, stock market or anything like that. But in this, no, you want to buy whatever you're doing, just buy it and hold it. And then, if it went up to 27,000 and you bought it at 9 or something, you wanted to sell it, I guess you could, but I would buy it and just wait and see if it does go up to 100,000. I mean, Kaiser was recommending people buy it when it was cents a piece.
Wow.
You understand? You would have tens of millions of dollars if you had a couple thousand Bitcoin back then. I'm saying buy as much as you feel comfortable with and just sit on it and wait 10 years and see where it is.
Nice.
But you don't want to, the last thing you want to do is buy something, get on there and watch it going up and down every day. It's boring. There's not really much of a point to it. It's expensive enough. It's not going to go generally. It's not going to, like, if you wanted to try to mess around and make a quick profit, you would deal with one that's a lot cheaper per item and see if it soared up and then immediately sell it. But I personally would not recommend messing with any of that type of stuff.
Okay, long-term investment all, is
what
best.
You will find at the end of the day is you'll lose money and you'll have wasted an incredible amount of time.
Well said, so Alex.
Buy it and hodl it, as they say, which just means hold it.
Excellent. Yeah, Alex, the other thing is, aren't they also printing money because of the massive stock market crash that came with all this lockdown? Aren't they trying to create the bubble again?
It's just, yeah, they're trying to keep asset. That's the thing. They print all this money, and I think they call it the Cantillon effect. I've listened to so many of these videos that when you print new money, all right, the prices are where they are. When you print new money, the people who get access to it get all the benefits out of it, and then the ones who don't get screwed by it. So they print all this money. They bail out their stupid people at the top corporations, starting with the Jewish investment banks like Goldman Sachs. Well, they get all the benefit of that money when it's still worth something, and that's what's keeping the assets in the stock market high. And they've gone beyond just bailing out the banks to now they're almost to the point where they're just directly buying stocks. And the point that all the people on YouTube who are the actual experts worth listening to make is that when they give all this money to Boeing and the rest, they don't go out and improve their business and invest or anything. They just buy back their stock to keep the price high. So it's all stock buyback is what Max Kaiser is saying. So the government is completely preventing the actual economy from working the way it's supposed to. When you make bad investments, you're supposed to go bust and go out of business. And then things you're supposed to, if you have stable money, it's not being printed, then you work and you save. And the dollar for like almost 100 years, like the 1800s, stayed about the same value. So it was predictable. There wasn't any central bank. It wasn't inflating the currency. So the value of the dollar was stable, and it was also tied to gold, I think, at one point, at least by 1900. So you could work. The idea is you work hard, you save the money, and then you invest the money. But now, and because money was harder to get and you would have higher interest rates, so if you save the money, you would get a return on your investment. Well, now they just print money. The investment rate is basically zero or even negative. Like if you save money in an account, they're actually taking money away from you
instead of
giving you money. So this is the perversion that the government has made, the Jews at the central bank have made by interfering in the market and using it to prop up failed enterprises and saying, oh, they're too big to fail. So the little guy loses purchasing power so that they can keep the rich Jew bankers at Goldman Sachs, who are supposedly so much smarter than everybody else, going. So it's just utterly, it's stealing across the board through central banking.
Yes.
And it's completely unfair, and it really is worthy of a revolution. Well, the idea of fighting back by some kind of hard money that would keep its value over time is what Bitcoin represents. The guy who wrote the white paper and created it under the pseudonym of Satoshi Nakamoto or whatever, no one knows who it is, but the idea was, it came out of the 2008 financial crash. And see, the point a lot of them make is the next crash from 2008 is going to be a lot worse because they've printed a hell of a lot more money and they've bailed out even more people just to keep this financial swindle that is the stock market going and keep the asset prices high. But it's all fake.
Yes.
So the point is that they've, over this time, Bitcoin is now about 11 years old, and it's a hard money. There will only ever be 21 million printed. They can't suddenly out of the blue say, oh, we're going to print an extra 2 billion Bitcoin. No, there's only ever going to be 21 million of them, and a lot of them are lost. So in fact, it's actually less than 21 million. So a lot of people think that eventually, they just had one of the most famous investors in the stock market. Now, he's not someone I really had heard of other than his name, Paul Tudor Jones, invested like 1-2% of his, he manages hedge funds or whatever. So he put 1-2% of his holdings into the market and for Bitcoin. So the bigger hedge funds, the bigger people on Wall Street are starting to look at this and take it more seriously. So The basic thinking is Bitcoin's a pretty good price now, and it's probably going to go very high up in the future. In the past, its high point was $20,000. Then it fell. That was 2017. It's now fallen back and has been trying to get back to the 10,000. It hasn't quite made it. Made it one time, but then fell back. And right now it's falling back toward 9,000. So it's a pretty good time to get it. But then again, it could fall down to 7,000 and be an even better time to get it. But in my opinion, if you value it, I think owning Bitcoin makes sense. I would not day trade it. I would only hold it and just wait.
Excellent. Well, Alex, it's awesome if the big companies start moving in on Bitcoin. Then it's going to make it even harder to get rid of this thing. That is
well, the investment fund, what it is, the investment funds, what they'll typically say is if you look at all the money that exists, the cryptocurrencies have, I don't know what it is, like $200-300 billion in them maybe. But that's a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of all the money and credit and bonds and stocks out there. A tiny, tiny, tiny little fraction is in Bitcoin and crypto as a whole. So the point is, if that money shifts in any appreciable way, like 3 or 4% of that shifts over into crypto, it's going to drive prices through the roof. And even as I was literally speaking,
yes.
Oh, it looks like Bitcoin fell under 9,000. Maybe it just went back. It kind of goes back and forth. But you see the point. There's out of all the money, Bitcoin and crypto is a tiny little sliver. It's all in bonds. It's in the stock market. It's just simply printed up money on the treasury sheets or some other device. But if a little more of that, all the pensions and this money goes into crypto, then it will really take off. But there are a lot of cryptocurrencies. The vast majority of them will eventually be worthless. And either one or a handful will probably win and be worth something over the longer haul. Because I think the interesting thing is, and I did something I called Mind Print yesterday, which was a reaction to an article that happened to be about Bitcoin and talking about, it was a libertarian article talking about the individual sovereignty that Bitcoin offers. It's kind of like what it is. Okay, the internet came up and that allowed peer-to-peer communications, right?
Yes.
So that we could talk without a Jewish filter. Well, this offers peer-to-peer money so that we are our own bank.
Yes.
But
yes.
The downside of that is we have to protect it. There's nothing backing it up. If we screw it up, we lose it. The upside is it's hard money. And we are in complete control. And what we want is anonymous, instant, secure communication of money. So we could send each other money from anywhere in the world. We could have $1 billion on a little essentially equivalent of a thumb drive in our pocket and go anywhere and not be controlled by any government. The government that's trying to steal our purchasing power by printing infinite dollars. Do you understand how revolutionary that is?
The counter argument might be that
the internet had that promise, but look at where it ended up 25 years later. At first, it was a free and equal platform where you and I are equal to CBS or something. But look where it is today. They've censored everybody. They've deplatformed everybody. And we're right back to the same old central control model where there's a handful of Jewish oligarchs who are dictating what everybody else is allowed to access. Right?
Absolutely.
So who's to say they couldn't do the same thing with cryptocurrency? Now, maybe technically they couldn't, apart from turning off the internet, but I don't think that would really work. But you have to think, is there a way they could destroy these coins? Could they just say Bitcoin is illegal? Say, well, they won't know if I have any. Well, that may be true or not true for Bitcoin. It may be true or not true for some of the other coins. Maybe a privacy coin that's got, does your coin have absolute privacy? So I think Bitcoin will, I think you have to start with Bitcoin, right?
It's the daddy.
Beyond there, Bitcoin is so far ahead. I think it only makes sense to get Bitcoin first. Once you got as much Bitcoin as you want, maybe look around at a few of the others, but they are much, much more speculative in my opinion.
Okay.
But I would look for something that could actually replace. Now, the original vision of Satoru Nakamoto was for Bitcoin to be cash, to be used like cash, but that's not how it's actually worked out. It's actually worked out to be more like gold.
Like an asset.
Transfer for a huge, an asset that stores value the way that gold does. It's not something you can use for cash, but others are trying to make actual cryptocurrency that can be used as cash, and they are much technically better than Bitcoin. Bitcoin is not the best one out there technically, but not all these coins are trying to do the same things. Then you've got Ethereum and smart contracts. I think the main takeaway I've had from studying it is that the financial transaction is kind of ultimately, we started with the internet and exchanging messages, but ultimately, maybe it all comes down to the financial transaction is the basis. And then along that, on top of that, or some technical way, rides data. And data includes everything up into the internet. Everything that we have on the internet could be lumped under data, including video, which is the most, you know, bandwidth hogging. My point is, all this can be, if you think of it as complete peer-to-peer, replace whatever the internet is constructed of today, make it completely anonymous, secure, instant, private, absolute privacy, peer-to-peer connections. And that seems to be where the overall picture is heading, so that you and I and other people we wanted to interact with could anonymously securely exchange whatever money or data we wanted in an uncensorable way. Is that possible?
Alex, I would think that that is somewhat possible. I would say that if I look at the way that people have been trying to work on the internet, if I look at some of the trends, the way in which they've tried to apply all the censorship has also created new things. Yes. So to give you a technical example, when they were shutting down websites, there's a new industry out there that's got what they call virtual machines. If you look at like DigitalOcean, you can buy a thing called a droplet. And a droplet is actually a server that is yours, and you can do with it what you want. And I've noticed that a lot of virtual machines have appeared now where people can take control. You no longer have the hosting company saying, hey, you can't do this and that. You've got people who are just saying to you, here's your machine. As long as you don't commit a crime, you do with it what you want.
Let me mention. So I think Tim Berners-Lee, who developed the World Wide Web, he's one of two guys who did that, is working on exactly this, where it's a reaction to kind of to Facebook and the way that things have gone, and the Chinese social credit, where they can, because that's a flip side, the blockchain technology that underlies Bitcoin and the rest of this can also be used for a complete, full, tyrannical collection of all the data about you. Let's say I want to bring some guy, Joe, I want to bring him down. I get all his medical data. And again, these are non-falsifiable. The blockchain stuff is non-falsifiable. So you can't go, there's no opportunity for graft or theft or falsification or whatever. Now, stuff can be stolen, but it can't really be changed. And say you get someone's banking information, their medical information, their employment information, pictures and video of them, everything they've ever posted on social media, and say you have that all in one place, you have a system of ultimate control over the population. This is what is being built in China. And actually, I saw a good tweet on Pivotal.net last night. A lot of it is being done in Australia as well. And the U.S. is certainly not far behind, and Europe is neither, probably isn't behind, but is, if anything, almost ahead. So you have, at the same time, the system of ultimate liberation versus the system of ultimate control, and which will win out. So we have to use these technologies. So really, a part of Team White is protecting yourself and strengthening your position by using this new technology for hard money. And eventually for hard internet, let's say, where they can't ban and deplatform us because they don't like that we're telling the truth about what they're doing. So anything that technically furthers the ability to expand this knowledge that we're giving you and this stuff we're talking about is pro-white, and we want to participate and be right there at the cutting edge of it, at least in use if we can't devise it ourselves. So is what's going on, people.
If I can jump in there, if you look at BitChute, BitChute is also a blockchain. So there we have our own video platform.
Yes.
That counters YouTube and its blockchain. And look at your own Pivel.net. That's also running, isn't it? Running on Mastodon, which is also some kind of
The Pivel is just an instance, as they call it, in the federated universe, which is some free software created by somebody. See, I don't even know. I didn't set it up. Varg set it up. But the point is, anyone can set up an instance, and then they have their own social media. And they can manage it the way they want.
And it's not centralized. That's
exactly
the key thing.
You see, exactly.
And Alex,
decentralized and peer-to-peer are always pro-white.
Now you're talking. A couple of months ago, Alex, I was even looking at domain names, and I found a place where you can buy domain names that work on blockchain. There is a place you can get it. I still want to buy one of them for myself.
That's fascinating.
So I found one that exists. Alex, I don't know if you know the story, just a bit of the background, just to show you what whites can do, Alex. All of these servers that we are running on, 90% of the internet is driven by Linux. But Linux isn't owned by Microsoft, etc. Linux is a thing that is an operating system that was created by a single white guy sitting in Finland.
And Linux Torvald.
Yes, that's
him. Linus Torvald. Right?
Linus Torvald. And Torvald has created a full-on operating system, and that operating system created by that white guy alone is the thing that drives virtually all of the internet. It's so successful. So, we are sitting with software technology where all it's going to take is the brain power and creativity of a couple of whites to create new software and new things. And using their creativity alone, they'll be able to take on things that will cost the Jews billions of dollars. Jews aren't going to write it.
Yeah, and that's what have we always said? The Jews' power is based technically, their ultimate foundation is racial loyalty. Is a source of Jews' power. Then that's what Team White is stimulating among you whites listening, is racial loyalty. And our loyalty to you is showed by giving you the best information we can and explaining stuff the best we can. And the two technical pillars of Jew power on top of that are control of the money and the media. And these new crypto technologies fight those. They're like taking a sledgehammer to the pillars of their power because they allow peer-to-peer communication as we're doing right now, and they're also allowing peer-to-peer hard money. Do you see how important that is? Do you grasp the hugeness of all this?
Exactly.
And as we've been speaking, yes, Bitcoin has fallen to under 9,000, so it's dropped about $1,000 almost in one day. So it's not a bad time to buy it is the last I'll say about that, but again, this shutdown, as Jan said, is breeding whites to think up new things, new ways to get around problems.
The creativity, I used to write software, and Alex, the creativity and the power that lies in these computer systems is only limited by the determination of whites. All you need is a couple of white people, couple of men and women with brains to come up with something new, and we can fight the Jews with our brain power.
My question is, I try, as someone who is not technical, who is interested in the implications and the sort of the design, but knowing what I want is something where we all can go we all can see something, or we can all be together and read something. I want something that's completely uncensorable.
Probably your peer-to-peer type stuff is going to be your best thing, like you've said. And Alex, if you look at email, consider email. Email is itself designed in order to survive a nuclear war. And so email is a perfect example of how they have designed something to be unstoppable. So email, for example, if I send you an email, it goes through a bunch of different servers. And email is designed so that if any servers are down, it starts finding other ways to get there. So if there had to be a nuclear war and 80% of the internet had to be destroyed tomorrow, as long as there is even one link between out of the remaining stuff, if there's even one link that between the two of us, email will always get through. And what you're describing about peer-to-peer is what is already in email. And so all you need is a system of networks and things to be able to communicate with each other. Even if they were to come and shut down 99% of the internet, if there's even 1% that can still talk to each other in some way, yeah, they'll not be able to stop us.
And well, it's a web. So if you knock out a few strands, you can still crawl, your message can still crawl around a different one. But
exactly. That is why I don't think that, I think that if they want to fight us on the internet, the sophistication of the software that is out there and the sophistication of the people is such that I think that there are going to be so many ways around it. And you must also know that, Alex, you've got links going through undersea cables. You've got other links going through satellites. As time goes by and technology improves, with me and my internet problems, I got myself wireless internet. And, you know, so as long as there's a technical mechanism to get a message from A to B, whether it's a cable, whether it's a radio wave, whether it's through a satellite, and you've got somebody who's got something somewhere, Alex, you're not going to be able to stop this fucking thing. And yeah, that is the most important thing, is we mustn't lose our communications. Like if we lose our communications in South Africa, we're dead. We're fucking dead. Then the blacks can come and kill us and you won't know about it, and so forth. But I must tell you, when I look at the way technology is going and the creativity of whites, I'm telling you, we're going to rock. I mean, look at something as simple as Gab. Gab coming to take on Twitter. Gab has been doing well. I mean, they've been weak where they should have been stronger, but it goes to show that, you know, some guy can come and take on Twitter. And I saw Goyim TV is back online. And, YouTube is just fucking itself by censoring people. Facebook is fucking itself by censoring people. Facebook was proudly saying that they'd knocked off nine point something million racist posts in the first quarter. YouTube has been proudly, the Jewess who runs YouTube, they've been proudly saying that they've cut off 70% of controversial content on YouTube. In the end, whites are going to want those things, and all they're actually doing is creating new markets for new people to go somewhere else. And they think that whites are like the blacks, that if you cut things off to us, that we're just going to sit and now die of starvation. Well, actually not. Whites are going to create new things. What was the other new thing I saw? Vanguard, that Vanguard guy, those Vanguard guys on the internet, also white
right guys. National Vanguard?
Yes, National Vanguard. They did you see that they put out their own search engine the other day?
No, I did not see that. A guy with them had done that back in the early 2000s. Was it the same fellow? I wonder.
I don't know, but I've seen a new name pop up, and they basically saying that what has happened is it looks like some guy has found the way to get into the Google database by normal means, and that he's gone into the Google database, and what he's done is he's just sucked out a subset of the Google database. So when you do a search on his search engine, it will only search white right sites. Unfortunately, my site is not on the list there. But if you do a search, you only get white right sites. How cool is that? So he's even tapped straight into Google to go and grab that. So this is the kind of power. This is why In my own struggles with the internet over the years, I came to realize that there's a lot of scope for whites if we get our technical people to do things. You know, there's no reason why we can't replace Google AdSense, which was doing advertising. Why can't we do advertising for whites only? And whites only businesses, why can't we do that? All those things I think are very possible if we can build up enough interest in it and enough enough traffic to our own websites. There's no reason why we can't duplicate everything that's existed. You know, Facebook, you and I have seen there's software that
yeah, well, we should have, but they've deplatformed people for so long that it's been successful. So there still has to be found some way around that.
Well, all I'm saying is that if we build our own Facebooks and our own Twitters and our own YouTubes, then we're fine. And it looks
No, because we did that. I did that in 2000. I built a new site. I had plenty of people looking at it. It was in the top 10,000 Alexa very quickly.
Yeah.
And just ended up being deplatformed all the time. So we
okay.
They're content as long as people can run marginal sites with not too many people visiting them. They don't really care about that, but they have absolutely derailed and kept small the white media. Now they're trying to essentially complete the process of wiping it out by making it illegal as well as technically.
Okay, so, now I see where you're coming from. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're fighting at the small end of the spectrum.
Well, they're not going to allow honest competition. And that's why we're in the position we are. And basically, to sustain these big sites, they're not going to allow you to run a site on YouTube and make ad money off of it. So ad money is what really would allow massive expansion, because otherwise you just have a bunch of eyeballs and you don't have any way to really raise money off them the way that you should be able to. If there was an actual market, we would have won. Because okay. People have proved that they've admitted this within the last 2-3 weeks. You had people on there saying that, like, YouTube admits they tinker with their own algorithms because their algorithms essentially lead people to the white right. So they fuck their own results in order to screw people, because so there's no market in operation at all.
Okay.
And then it would be one thing if they did that and left us alone, but they don't leave us alone. They actively go after us to deplatform us. So
it's a war. It's a war.
It is a war. It is a war. Anyway, well, Jan, I think we've gone on about as long as we need to for one show. We ought to keep it under a couple of hours.
But, okay. I've got one final
fantastic
thing.
Reports from you. Do you have some last words? And I don't think I really do, but I'll say a couple things and wrap it up after
okay.
You give your last statements.
The only thing that I have to say is the South African government created a whole thing to do COVID testing, and they were proud of how many tests they were doing per day. And I went and did a quick calculation, how long would it take them to test the entire population of South Africa? And it works out as it will take 4,200 years.
Wow.
So that's black efficiency for you. And they're very proud of their thing. But 4,200 years if they carry on the way they are. So those are my last words.
Good Lord. That is a real testament to their ability. Where apes rule men is how we always think of it. But yeah, you told us a lot of fascinating stuff about South Africa today. And I definitely want to hear more. And I'm sure the people listening do too. I can just say, signing off from Missouri, yeah, things are more or less getting back to normal here. So people continue to be scared, but I just tell everybody, and I'm telling you as a member of Team White, get out there and get some sun in your skin. 20 minutes, your vitamin D starts growing. That's what you need. Maybe take some zinc, some vitamin C, but fresh air, sunshine are going to do more for you and boosting your immune system than huddling inside and shivering in the closet trying to avoid this. So don't be scared of stuff that's fake and unreal and not as big of a threat as it's made out to be. Don't believe the hype about health, just as you don't believe the hype about race or about money. Anyway, for Jan in South Africa, I'm Alex in Nemo saying thanks for being with us today, and we'll be back with you again for another Team White episode real soon.
These are Alex Linder's websites. www.alexlinder.com, pyville.net. That's his Twitter type of website. www.vnnforum.com. You'll find a ton of information on there. And then his news website, which is www.kirksvilletoday.com. These are my websites: historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.